Great. Okay. There have been once or twice in 57 of these that we've forgotten. We got so carried away with our conversation that we forgot to do it. And one time early on, I think I just sat and talked to myself for 30 minutes so we could have it. Could you
I think
that,
someone
please?
Just joined, but I didn't get the name.
It's Joe Francitelli, Camden County College.
Oh, okay. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Camden County. And are you in the Bridgeport area then, too?
Bridgeport
Joe?
Area, state.
Oh.
We're in New Jersey.
Camden County,
sorry.
Mike.
That's right. I've got my states mixed up. New Jersey.
Yes.
Great. Last week we had George from New Jersey Youth Corps on, and he gave us a good review of what they were doing up there and with the Youth Corps and doing some good work. And New Jersey is an interesting state, and I don't know that you all were on the call last time, but I think one of the very interesting things that occurred, we'll talk about it in a second in terms of placing your populations, but I interrupted Glo, and she's going to give us an update on what's happening in Washington.
Yeah, I talked to Joe Bruss from headquarters about an hour ago, and one of our topics of conversation was the upcoming RFP. He had emailed me last week and said that he anticipated that it was going to be put out within the next couple of days, that he had been given the green light by management to let it go out. The new anticipated deadline for the proposals was going to be April 5th. Now, this morning, he told me that they've kind of put it back on hold. He was just very frustrated. There's a lot going on in Congress, budget cuts, everything else, and so that's the reason for the red light. He doesn't know when it's going to be put out. He hopes that it's still going to be this week, but it kind of doesn't sound like it will be. And he really couldn't give me any further information as far as when he thinks that it's going to be released.
So we'll just stay tuned.
Yeah, he said that I would be the first to know so that I can get out on the listservs and make that announcement for all the people that are members on those two listservs that we have. But he really couldn't give me any idea now because they keep, you know, they give him the green light and then they take it away. So
could you,
about as much as he can tell me.
Mm-hmm. And I think the thinking is that no matter how this will be, it'll probably be due around the 5th of April. They gave themselves some room there for a little bit of flack. And he also
I'm
made
sure,
that
though,
comment
that if they, you know, if it gets extended too much longer, they're going to, I would think that they would have to back that out a little, don't you think, Mike?
Right. They may have to. And one of the things about EPA is their end of their fiscal year is the end of September. So they need to award those funds before the end of the fiscal year. And then, of course, you have to back that up a little bit, too. So it's they do start running into some real issues. We always have an annual workshop. Glo, do you want to talk a little bit about that the grantees and when that might be?
The main deliverable that we have for our cooperative agreement working with EPA and their brownfields program is the annual all-grantee meeting where all of the current grantees and past grantees all come together in one place to network with each other and with EPA headquarters staff and regional staff. And the past 3 years, we've been holding that grantee meeting in August, and it's been a very last-minute push to be able to get the newly funded grantees into that meeting. And so this year, since there's been such a delay in getting that RFP out, we are looking at holding the meeting in October. We don't have a date yet, but that's kind of what we're looking at right now. And I did run that by headquarters this morning, and it made perfect sense to them, too.
Yeah. And it's a great meeting. And those who regularly attend the PLCs are also have a chance to attend that meeting. And at that, we take mentors who are everyone, almost everyone at the meeting has got a grant, and we've got EPA people. And we have a lot of people who had grants, and those grants were completed and are actually launched and getting funds from other sources, and they also attend, and they're great mentors. People like George from New Jersey Youth Corps, who basically started out with a grant and now gets several $1 million from other sources, Department of Labor and other sources up there in New Jersey, and has several training sites around the state, and doesn't really need the money from this program, but he continues to support it and comes to our meetings and work with us. Still has an environmental program, so we do get the benefit of experience from those people. So and people like Durham. Durham's been had a great. You have a great program up there, and it's interesting. You've gone through the cycles and you've learned the positives and negatives of one of these job training programs, and where the real problems are. Go ahead. Okay, I thought someone might have wanted to make a comment on that. The point we're at now is that we know that this is going to be going ahead, and there's some of us who have programs and they're ongoing, and then some of us who are going to be wrapping up their programs and want to re-up and apply for a new one. And some of us that will be ending programs and then may have to hold out for a year or so and catch the next round. And, of course, all of those, we look at these job training programs as kind of continuous programs, and there are times when some of the grantees have had to continue their program for a year, and then they reapplied, and then they were able to get it the next year. Some of them have been out 1 or 2 years. JFY has been out for a year or so, and they'll reapply. And sometimes, depending on how much money is available and what the grants look like, they may or may not get re-upped. And so the idea, though, is to try to take these grants and to try to leverage them with dollars from other sources. And I know this is a real difficult time for that. But to the extent that you're able to leverage your dollars and get some funding from other people, it's very advisable, and use this as use this money as kind of more extra money rather than money that it would just the sole support of your program. So with that in mind, and I think y'all up in Bridgeport and in Durham have kind of been through the ups and downs of these things, haven't you, in terms of working with these programs. Now, are you going to try to, in Durham, are you going to try to continue this program? Are you going to try to schedule classes no matter what, or what is your thinking?
Right now, we're just trying to see. We have, since, like I said, we have already completed our last training class that just graduated in December. So, and we'd like to reapply for a second round, and hopefully it will come out soon. So that's where we're at right now. But we have implemented, you know, some of the smaller pieces of the classes with the community college to kind of offer it out to the community. So regardless of what goes on, there's still going to be some components of that grant.
So you've kind of gone into a spore stage, kind of
right.
Put you on a lower level, but keeping the program going, and
right.
Hopefully pick it back up if you reapply
right.
And get accepted.
Right. Right, because we do have a lot of people who are interested.
Mm-hmm. Usually once you start the programs, you really start to ramp up, and it's people, just when you get going, everybody hears about it, and you've got some graduates out there, and more people want to start applying. And the nice thing about hooking up with a community college is often they'll pick up the slack for a little while and continue with some of the courses. Are you doing it as part of the credit program, or is it kind of a non-credit program in the
Non-credit to continuing education.
Mm-hmm. Now, up in Harrisburg, you're pretty much also affiliated with community college there. Is your approach similar?
Well, we also have a program where they can get an associate's degree, but this is just a separate 8-week program. It's pretty much a separate entity from that.
But you can use the resources of the school or whatever.
Oh, sure. We have some of the instructors.
And that's an interesting model. That's we call that the kind of the community college model. And then you've got groups probably more like you have up in Bridgeport, where you have a separate group. Now, are you in Bridgeport? Are you connected with the community college at all up there?
Not at this time. No, we're working with the workplace.
Workplace. It's a separate nonprofit. And that's the other model. That's the other model, and they all work. Now that model that you're talking about. Excuse me.
No, I just heard them talking about the workplace last week, and you know, finding other dollars.
The WIA is now. In New Jersey, are you familiar with George's program up in New Jersey Youth Corps up in Camden?
No, I'm not really familiar with that. Is he in the northern Jersey area?
Mm-hmm. Now, what they've done is they're that other model. We've seen one model that's kind of connected fairly closely to community colleges. The other one is connecting to the Workforce Investment Board or Department of Labor, and there's a kind of a third model that's a you're working with a nonprofit, maybe it's Goodwill Industries or something like a workplace nonprofit that isn't necessarily, it may not be connected with Department of Labor, and often it might be even affiliated with an organized labor organization. And so you've got these different models, and they all work. The idea is to hook on up with someone who is large enough that can help you through some lean times, and also someone who can partner with you and bring to the table some additional resources. Because one of the problems we all know with these EPA job training programs is that they only provide money for environmental education, environmental training, and everything associated with environmental training. It does include marketing and labor market assessment and recruiting and assessment of students and training, but only environmental training and then placement and then follow-up of that. But it does not include those things like life skills training, stipends, if you're going to have stipends. It doesn't include any of those other things. So what you need to do is, of course, find a partner, whether that's a community college, a workforce investment board, it might be a university, it might be organized labor, it might be a nonprofit or community organization that already has in place some of those other types of training that's going on. And what you bring to the table is this additional environmental component. So it brings us into this whole idea of, before the grant is issued, we start looking at how we want to organize our program. And if ideally at this point in time, before this starts, you start looking at who your partners are going to be and who your affiliations are going to be. And certainly one of the things that, and we don't, everyone on the call has really met the qualification criteria. Basically, you have to be nonprofit, government entity, or tribal unit. And you all, in that case, is not a problem. Once you have that situation, you want to make sure that you find someone. You have to decide who's going to be your fiscal agent, your fiscal partner, who's going to be the one doing the when they do the audits, who's doing the bookkeeping, who's doing the reports to the federal government, the quarterlies, who is doing all of that administrative work. And hopefully, you, if you're not familiar with it, you want to find someone who has had some federal grants, and preferably job training grants, and even more preferably have worked with EPA or Department of Labor. Each agency is a little different in terms of auditing and reporting, but ideally the closer you could get to EPA, someone who has had some experience, it's, and have them as fiscal agent. If you're not, and we don't have some of the fellows on the call that really are not in a position to be fiscal agents, we suggest what they do is they find a strong partner who have done these grants. For example, you all at Durham Tech have been through this, and you've gone through this whole process. It's not an issue. If someone was in this area, for example, Raleigh, or if someone else in the Durham area wanted to expand this program, our recommendation probably would be, you know, you ought to talk to Durham, and because they've been through this, and have them as your fiscal agent, because
right.
they've been through this process, you know, because it's very difficult if you're starting out by yourself and you've never done this. So,
that's
so
correct.
You want to lock into someone, and someone on the line has had some good experience with this. Is that you want to elaborate on that?
Sure. In Durham, yeah, the city of Durham is the fiscal agent for the grant. And then, of course, we contract or RFP out the training portion. But we have had a lot of good success in leveraging our program with the WIA program and a lot of the other community programs here in Durham, which will, you know, have essentially allowed our students to be able to go through the program and find employment. I think that's one of the good pieces of, like you said, having a good fiscal agent or having, you know, some great partners who are at the table. There, everybody's able to kind of share their expertise and make the grant project something that is worthwhile.
And so in your case, it's interesting. You needed to have someone with a strong fiscal background that could work with. You have to assume you're going to be audited by EPA.
Right.
And these aren't really threatening things, but someone's going to come down, or there might be a desk audit. And Glo's been through these. She's been through the full audit and the desk audit. And, and what is your experience, Glo, with those audits? Are they really scary, or how do you feel about them?
Well, of course, they make you nervous. But really, if you have kept good records, you really shouldn't have any problems at all. I have been asked questions of why I picked one location for the annual grantee meeting, for example, over another, and I had my answers already. I mean, I had reasons for everything I did. I have everything backed up with documents. So... It was really pretty easy. No problems. You just have to document everything.
And sometimes the desk audits, once when they were really concerned about environmental programs, they sent two fellows out and had to talk to our HMTRI accountant, and they actually went over, you know,
mm-hmm.
they went over everything. But they're not difficult, but you've got to have someone who's familiar with this. And the nice thing about what Durham did, and I'm not saying that Durham did this, but a scenario would be, for example, you want to start a program, you're not real strong in terms of maybe the fiscal part of it, so you go to the city, for example, or someone who, it could be the WIA, it could be the city or the county government, or it could be another organization that has a lot of familiarity with this, and then you ask them if they would want to be your fiscal agent. And then you go up with that. And as a Durham, they became the, while they're the predominant partners, they're kind of the tail wagging the dog. They're really, the program is really located there, but they're also able to use the resources of the city of Durham, which is excellent
right.
approach. And it also allows you to leverage things. The other thing it allows you to do is when things get a little tough and you might need some interim funding at some point, they may be able to find some discretionary funds or recommend another program that can collapse your program into that one. And of course, life skills. Now, who provided your life skills? Is that another community organization?
No, we actually partnered with Durham Tech, and we developed pieces of their human resource development program, which actually provides that type of skills and training. And so we incorporated that into our actual training program. So they have a week of, or 40 hours of resume development, interviewing skills, how to overcome barriers if you have like a criminal background, computer skills, networking, things like that, that we incorporated into the actual training program itself.
So there you were able to leverage some community college dollars with that, and
mm-hmm.
then, of course, probably had some assistance from the WIA also in terms of
permanent
placement.
That's correct.
And so you built a group, and the EPA and the reviewers look very kindly on these kind of partnerships. They're looking for these groups because when you submit your grant, by the time you finish writing your grant, you basically laid out your entire program, and they can really tell those that are going to be successful because in your case, you've got all the components that you need to make this program successful. If you don't have those things lined up and they're not well demonstrated in the grant, then they're going to say, then they'll be discussing, well, where is this life skills component coming from, or where is the recruitment placement component coming from? I don't see it
Correct.
In this grant. So you really have to have those together. One of the things that was mentioned on the call, last call 2 weeks ago, and this was from New Jersey, George has been working with the state, and we're looking at other states who may have the same thing. They have you're talking about ex-offenders, and in that call we talked about defining your target group. One of the first things you're going to want to do is start thinking about what types of people you're going to be training. Are you going to be talking about veterans, ex-offenders, women, minority, all of the above? What is going to be the minimum entry level requirements? If you're going to have ex-offenders, you have to, and that target group kind of defines the whole rest of the program. And one of the discussion threads was, well, if you're going to have ex-offenders, are you going to want to train to something that people at the other end won't hire ex-offenders? And George said, you know, and we got into this discussion about placing ex-offenders, and George said, you know, we're using a little-known concept that's being used in New Jersey of security bonds. And they're getting surety bonds on ex-offenders so that when they place them and they go to the employer, their graduates are bonded. And he says it's much easier to place, and it takes away that whole argument of, you know, of concern that there may be some liability issue with hiring ex-offenders. And not all states have this, but certainly they have it up in New Jersey, and it's been a great help to him. He's placed several people with these security bonds. But that very first step of kind of thinking what kind of target group are we going after, because it kind of defines the whole rest of the program. We're going to be talking about doing labor market assessments, but you know clearly, to construct a labor market assessment, you kind of slant it towards the type of jobs you're going to be placing, and the types of jobs you're going to be placing is going to depend a lot on your target group. It's a question of chicken and the egg. Which do you do first, labor market assessment or define your target group? And it's kind of happened simultaneously because you want to say, my target group are going to be this group of people. And if it's going to be, for example, if it's going to be pregnant women, we have women programs, you're going to have to focus your labor market assessment on programs that there won't be a physical barrier, whether it's working with carrying heavy weights, or if in some cases we have women and we have pregnant women in our programs, but that's okay as long as they don't have to be in fit-up suits or they have to undergo something that may be detrimental to their health. So once you define your target group and at the same time you start your labor market assessment, and this labor market assessment is extremely important because it's going to be aimed at the target group of your trainees. So if you decide you're going to go after ex-offenders or people that may have difficulty getting jobs, you're going to want to slant your labor market assessment. Okay, what kind of jobs are we looking at that there will not be discrimination in terms of hiring or outright requirements that you can't be an ex-offender to get this job? So you're going to zero your labor market assessment in. And one thing you're going to find out when you start doing your labor market assessments is there's all kinds of general data out there, but there's not a lot of good specific data that you're going to need to write your grant. And you're going to have to zero in very, very stealthily on your target population. So you want to customize your labor market assessment. And in this downtime that we have before the grant comes out is a really good time to start doing this kind of thinking or rethinking. If you have a program in place now, what is my population that I'm going to be training? And sit down and kind of, and if you already have a program, you ask the question, what kind of people are we training? Where are they coming from? And what skills or potential barriers to entry into the job workplace do they have? And then what you want to do is you want to focus your advisory committees and your people in the private sector that you're going to be contacting in your labor market assessment to types of industries and jobs that will accept those people that you're targeting. And your labor market assessment is going to become very focused. It won't be this broad thing that says we're going to be hiring 50,000 clean energy jobs. That just doesn't hack it. And when the reviewers look at that, or anyone looks at it, it's meaningless. The question is if you're going to be targeting ex-offenders and they may be working in wastewater treatment, then you have to make sure that you check with the city and say, do you have openings for wastewater treatment plant operators, and do you hire ex-offenders, and if you do, are there any requirements? So you've got to zero in on that. Or if it's going to be ex-offender program, you go to construction firms who are going to be doing environmental construction, whether it's deconstruction or some sort of environmental construction related project. Would you hire ex-offenders? What barriers to entry might I expect? And so your labor market assessment is going to get very specific into your target group. And these are the kind of questions you want to start asking at this point. And also, those overall big picture things will also influence who you get on your advisory boards and who you partner with. Clearly, if you're going to be training people who are going to be construction-type jobs in the environment, you're not necessarily going to go to some high-level software firm for advisors or anything. You're going to be looking at people in that business. Durham is a really good example. In fact, I had been at your conference with a lot of your supporters, and in your case, I remember you have a lot of sampling firms, and it's interesting that you're focused on a lot of air sampling, and a lot of the fellows that were there from industry who are your advisors and also hiring your people were from the sampling and analysis industry, which was very interesting. It was a pure environmental play, and it looked like you had a great reputation for people in these industries, and they were very interested in your program. I was very impressed at the relationship between Durham Tech and the environmental firms in Durham that were obviously pleased at your program and interested in your students. It was a great relationship between you had defined the participants in your program, and I'm sure you realized that those were students that you were going to be able to place because you knew the people that were going to be hiring them, and you were able to provide the training that your advisors kind of recommended that you train them to. So they were very valuable to your employers. I was quite impressed when I saw that program.
Hi, this is Tony Wood with the National Spill Control School. Can you tell me if that Durham Tech program is one that was a winning entrant last year, or is that?
We'll let Tanya answer that.
We got the grant in 2010. So we had, and prior to that, we had already had another one.
Okay.
So we had a 2-year grant that we had, and like I said, we just ended that grant, but it was a 2-year grant, and we actually did have a lot of success from bringing on people in our advisory board who were able to kind of network out, and so they were able to bring in more individuals to our events because they were reaching out to some of their colleagues. And that's how we were able to successfully get some of our people placed because they were inviting other groups to the event.
But you brought up a really good program. Well, a good concept. We often look at, you know, training people and then trying to get them jobs, and it's a symbiotic relationship. There is a real interest in people who need people with training. When someone comes out of one of these programs, they have several $1,000s worth of certifications in their hands. They've been trained. They've gone through a rigorous training program. They've been vetted. They've been on time. They've got the life skills. They've had to compete to get into the program with perhaps hundreds of other people who want to get into the program. They're selected. There's a dozen of them. They're really the best of the best in that that group, and they've gotten excellent training, and they're ready. They're work ready. They don't now. What they need is experience on the job. So for the employer, it's great. And when I was at Durham Tech, I saw that the interest in the employers, as much as investing in your program for their benefit, not necessarily for yours. I could see how it was a real benefit to the employers to link up with a job training program.
That's true.
It's a program that goes both ways. So I think those are the kind of things that we can think about in this early stages. Now, one of the things about these conversations is we hold them to 30 minutes, so we don't want them too long. So we're going to wrap this up, but we're going to be meeting again on the 22nd of February, every 2 weeks, at 2 to 2:30. So I'll send out some post-session notes. And I'm also going to put in there a webinar, which you maybe already know about, but there's going to be a webinar on from the Office of Debarment. These are the grant police. They're not the program people. They're the grant police, and they're going to go through all the rules and regulations of EPA grants, and it's something that will be occurring on the 23rd that you could sign up for. But I'll just put in the post-session notes that email address that you can sign up for that if you're interested. It's mostly of interest to the fiscal agents, but it's good for all of us to be aware of what their requirements are, and they'll be talking about nothing programmatically so much as what's legal, what's illegal, what are the reporting procedures, and that type of thing. So I'll put those in the notes. You may want to sign up for that. So thanks all for the discussion this week. And now I'm hoping, and I've said this the last three calls, I hope the next call we'll have this RFP out and we can start talking about that.
Yeah, that would be nice. I just don't know.
Yeah. It's out of our hands, and it's really out of Joe's hands. It's not his fault. It's just
we all know
what's going on in Washington. So
I think Joe is just as frustrated as we are. So
The program will go, and I think barring some catastrophic thing, but it sounded like they had gotten some approvals from higher up, and he said it was in his shop. So we'll see what happens. So Okay. Well, we'll talk to you all in a couple of weeks. If you have any questions,
thanks.
You could also email me, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
Okay, you all have
Thank
a
you.
Good week.
Thanks,
Bye-bye.
Everyone. Bye.
Bye.